Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
It's Good Friday, literally. Thanks for being with us. Chris Cartman will be with us shortly on the show. We'll visit with Chris about the coaching search at Arizona State, which I think is coming to a rapid end if there was ever a beginning to it. Chris, from the beginning, said that ASU was going to be hiring Jeff Capel, if I remember it correctly, that he was the leading candidate, and it appears that that's the direction that they're going to go. So we'll talk with Chris here in about 20 minutes, plus Arizona State spring football and some things around ASU this morning. Goody at the Movies may be with us. It's Good Friday, so you just never know. We'll find out on that front. Jordan Hamm, Jordy Hambone is in today for Eric, which is fine. It is good to see you. Good to be seen and all that. Yeah. Good to be seen. You excited to be here? You don't sound, get his camera turned on or whatever you need to do there, Jared. I mean, we want you on camera. It's fine. What, are you shy? You can't be shy in this job. Don't be shy in this job, man. Or else you're going to be done, fired.
Never said I was.
Finished. All right. There's some things going on today, even on Good Friday. And this is one of those days where we have some fun, but as always, what's going on in the world of sports, things locally that catch my eye, and also on a national scale too. There's some things here that I didn't think that I would be seeing this year. And let's get started on that point. Brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. The Honda Resort and Casino here on this holiday weekend. You want to get away? You could be in Pine Top later today if you're here in the Valley or around the great state of Arizona. Head up to the Honda Resort and Casino. Pull down on that slot machine. Get some big winnings. Eat some great food. Have some fun. Do it all at the Honda Resort and Casino. Honda Resort and Casino, place to stay. Get away from it all in the high country at the Honda Resort and Casino just outside of Pine Top in the beautiful White Mountains. The thing that I never thought that I would see in Valley sports, at least this year, was accomplished last night by the Diamondbacks. I'm going to start on that front. The Diamondbacks found somebody to take Trevor Cahill out of here. Somebody, anybody, please take $12 million. We'll figure a way to get $11.5 million off of our books. $12 million. And the Diamondbacks traded away Trevor Cahill. I'm very happy with this. This is, in fact, why I'm making it my lead story. It's pretty easy to lead with the Suns gagging again. I'll get to that in a minute. It's pretty easy to go with the Final Four. I don't have any teams from Arizona in the Final Four. So for me to see Trevor Cahill traded yesterday, I was doing bad. I could not believe this. First of all, I can't believe that the Diamondbacks didn't have to pay somebody an entire amount to please leave. He's not a bad guy. He was not a good pitcher at all. And the contract he had here was just atrocious. Thankfully, Archie Bradley stepped forward in the rotation. And so the Diamondbacks make a move that I guarantee you, Cahill will pitch better in Atlanta than he did here because he couldn't be any worse here. One of the worst trades in the history of the Diamondbacks was Trevor Cahill. Wasn't his fault. But when he got here, it certainly was. So they send $6.5 million along with Cahill to get the deal done. They actually saved $5 million of this. They get back a minor league prospect. I don't care. I just want him gone. And why would the Braves take him? Let's go number four here. This is MLB.com Braves reporter Mark Bowman. What would Atlanta actually see in Trevor Cahill?
If they believe that what they saw of him this year, in spring training, that he's a guy who, when he gets to be with Roger McDowell, a former sinker baller, a guy that can relate to his repertoire, he will find some success there in Atlanta.
All right. And I actually happen to believe that. It's kind of like when Brandon McCarthy left the Diamondbacks, all of a sudden the clouds lifted from him, and he went to the Yankees, and now he's with the Dodgers, and things worked out, and McCarthy kind of ripped the Diamondbacks out the door. I don't know if Cahill will or not. I don't really care. My point is, I've gone on a limb and have already said, our buddy Pedro Gomez, who's with us every week during the baseball season, I've already told Pedro that the Diamondbacks are going to win 84 games. And he laughed at me. He scoffed at me. He made me feel tiny. He humiliated me. So, now that Trevor's out of here, I feel better. I would much rather have Archie Bradley every fifth day than Trevor Cahill. That's all. So that story is on my mind today. to take you through what the Suns were able to accomplish last night in absolutely unequivocally choking away the game the way that they did. I don't know if it'll take me more than 5 or 6 minutes. It might, because it was a microcosm of the season. I feel so bad for Jeff Hornacek. These are not Jeff Hornacek type of players. The more that I watch the team, the more that I'm convinced that the group that the upper management has thrown at him and has said, you can win with this group, they're just not tough-minded. They're not. You don't give up 5 points in 10 seconds the way that they did last night. Leave Steph Curry open for a three that is a two-rebound possession for the Suns last night. If you missed the game last night, I was on Twitter afterwards, and fans were just livid. And it's to the point with this team that they have regressed from where they were last year, in my opinion. They have completely folded their tents here in the last week and a half to 2 weeks. They were a team that was in playoff position, much like the squad last year. Squad last year finished on a higher note. Squad this year is going to finish, I don't know if it's going to be free fall here in the final 6-7 games, but the way that it's gone, they've lost 5 in a row. They're finding ways to lose games that they should not lose. Not that beating Golden State, last night I was getting some of this nonsense on social media about what a great win this would be to propel us into the offseason. Guys that are in the NBA, they get paid big jack, don't sit around in August and say, you know that game in the Bay Area where the Warriors didn't really give a darn and we were just doing our thing and we were actually able to pull it, but that's going to springboard us towards next year. That's not how it works. And once again, it's just the way they went about it. Final 10 seconds, Warriors score 5, they lose. The game winner by Harrison Barnes, get in front of him. Please just get in front of him. Here is Eric Bledsoe on what happened last night at the end of the game.
You know, we just tried to get a shot up. You know, a couple of times we ended up getting balls in the type of situations, we don't even get a shot up. So, you know, we got a shot up. So, and they came down and made, you know, a hell of a play.
Yeah. Not much time was left on the clock. You can't sit there and say, I'm going to hold it a second or two longer. Play better defense. The Steph Curry three after multiple offensive rebounds was egregious on the Suns' part. It was just unacceptable. Here's more from Eric Bledsoe.
You know, me and PJ, collided on the rebound. We were supposed to have, seal the game, I think, and it just popped loose. You know, those, the type of plays that have been happening to us all season long.
Okay. When those plays happen to you, it's not just it's a basketball play or it's on accident or just bad teams find ways to lose games. The Suns found another way to give away a game that they had won. You know, we go back through this year and the game-winning shot by the Clippers, the game-winning shots that they've had against them this season. It's always, it was a lucky player, it was a lucky shot, rather than we screwed up. And the people that screwed up at the end of the game are the veteran leaders that are on the floor. I actually thought T.J. Warren had a game that he can look at as a rookie and take the whole game back and look at it and say, you know, I did some very good things here. So there was the upside because they're out of it. And for young kids to get playing time, I'm fine with that. But the veterans that they have here just have got to go. They don't have veteran leadership. They do not have a cast of characters that model Jeff Hornacek. There's no other way to put it. Nobody can explain to me otherwise. The only guy that you can build around is Bledsoe. And even in Bledsoe's case, I have to say I'm a little shaky here on this one. You know, man, they're going to be a team that's going to, next year will be a 11, 10, 9, trying to get into the top 8. They're not going to get LaMarcus Aldridge. They're not going to sign Kawhi Leonard. And no one else is going to swoop in on that one. They're not going to get DeMarcus Cousins here. They're not going to get Marc Gasol here. If you're a player that is wanting to win a championship and you're in free agency this summer, Why would you come to Phoenix? Are they close? They're not even close. If you're Kevin Durant in 2016, why would you come? Why would you consider Phoenix? The thing is, the organization is so far off the tracks. And you see games like last night, and it's not a one-time deal. It's not a fluke. You know, it's just maddening to see this organization, this once-proud franchise, just become, you know, I don't like to sit here every day and make fun of them. I don't. You know, I would like to see them figure it out and push through. But it's year after year after year after year. And these guys that they have on the floor, that get the Morrises out of here. Just done. Finished with them. So there's that on my mind. Congratulations to NAU. They lost last night in college basketball. They lost the CIT title game to Evansville. Came up short. Doesn't matter. 23-15. That was a terrific run for them. Final Four, it's going to be Kentucky and Duke, in my opinion. I want it to be Duke and Kentucky. Who doesn't want it to be Duke and Kentucky? It's no offense to Tom Izzo. Bo Ryan's fine. But I want to see battle of heavyweights. If Kentucky beats Duke, Jahlil Okafor out on the floor and Winslow against what Kentucky has up front, can I see that happening as we sit here Monday? Sure, but tomorrow night I will be cheering for Kentucky and Duke. I want to see the biggest of biggest. If Kentucky wins the game tomorrow night and wins the game on Monday night, would you have to say they're one of the best teams in the history of college basketball? They rolled through the season undefeated. Were they pushed a few times? Sure they were. Is this different than the UCLA team that went undefeated? We'll get into that on Monday. On the other side, though, Chris Cartman will be with us. We're going to switch gears for a couple of minutes. We have not talked a bit this week about the ASU head basketball coaching search in terms of Jeff Capel, and that's where it looks like they're heading. We have not talked about spring football for ASU in a couple of weeks. So a little bit of ASU conversation here. We do a lot on the college front. Later in the show, Sarah Thomas, why you need to know that name if you're a sports fan, because the NFL is going to make her the first female referee. And it's coming. And we'll get into her story here in a little bit, too. On the other side, though, we'll talk with Chris Cartman. SunDevilSource.com. That's next.
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Chris Cartman's with us for a couple of minutes, sundevilsource.com. Chris has been out in front on the Arizona State basketball story from day number one on the replacement for Herb Sendek. In fact, when you and I spoke, what was it, a couple of weeks ago when I was in Portland, you were the first to report that Jeff Capel was the guy, and then everybody nationally picked it up and didn't give you credit. What a surprise. Anyways, Chris joins us now for a couple of minutes. Are you still of that opinion it's Jeff Capel that is out front?
Yeah, if he wants the job, it's going to be his. I think ASU's done a pretty good job in the last few days of closing down the any kind of leaks that may be out there. But they flew out to meet with him, and that was after several conversations. He's the only coach that they've met with to this point in person, to the best of my knowledge. I saw a Jeff Goodman tweet from just within the last half hour or so. He put a picture of Capel up from a photo that he took of him at the Final Four and said he's not in Tempe, .. yet.
Yeah.
And Jeff Capel, I mean, we're not talking about somebody who's speculative. Jeff Goodman's a guy who breaks a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And certainly we were ahead of the game on the story, and we had heard even before Sendek was fired that Capel was the front runner, and there's nothing that's happened that's changed my perspective on that yet.
I'm not overly thrilled, and I'm not overly disappointed. I'm just kind of okay on this hire.
I get that.
You know?
Yeah.
Shaka Smart, they couldn't afford him. That's what ASU told me. We can't afford him, and that's their problem, in my opinion. Maybe that's why the situation has been like it's been for 20 years, when you see somebody that you know you want, but you have to just keep walking because you don't want to pay him more than the football coach.
Exactly right. And they have very serious infrastructural issues at ASU that prevent a home run hire from being made. And so they have to fix those things. And the order that needs to take place for that to get fixed is football stadium comes online, that gets you more revenue. Football coaching salary goes up for Todd Graham, somewhere north of $3 million in the next couple years. Then you get Wells Fargo fixed, or you get a new arena, one of those two things. USA Basketball gets the deal finalized, and they break ground on that. And at that point, only at that point, is ASU going to be able to really be able to appeal to a coach at the top of the scale, or even probably a good tier two coach, where they could get them to come over. Because right now, what ASU has to offer, not just from a financial standpoint, but also infrastructurally and with the commitment and support among the fan base and the community, it just doesn't resonate with coaches at a high level.
Yeah, we're not seeing ESPN doing live shots out here and talking about the ASU search as they have been breathing effortlessly over the Texas search or Alabama or Tennessee, which tells you all you need to know about the view of this job nationally, unfortunately. I mean, I'm not bagging on ASU. I'm just being factual. Nationally, this has been kind of like, okay, they're hiring him like UC Irvine's keeping their coach. Hasn't caused a buzz.
Right. Remember when we talked about Marshall a couple of weeks ago from Wichita State?
Yep.
He just turned down almost $5 million a year at Alabama. And I said there's no way that he was going to be someone ASU could target because of its limitations from a salary standpoint. Well, ASU is not even offering half that amount of money to its basketball coach. So not only can you not get Greg Marshall, but you can't even get coaches like maybe Ed Cooley at Providence, who's a really good job at a BCS coach. You have to either take somebody who's already failed, a la Jeff Capel, and maybe it happened when he was younger. Mm-hmm. He's been rehabilitated to some degree under Krzyzewski. Or you have to take a flyer on a young coach who's done it at a lower or middle level and is hungry and passionate and has the energy and checks all those boxes, but hasn't been able to demonstrate it at a high level, and also probably doesn't have the same name recognition. So that's a big challenge. And I think at least Dr. Crow and Ray Anderson, they kind of understand that. And so they're trying to think about this in a long-term perspective, which I kind of get. If they can make sure that they're able to take care of all the things that they need to in the next few years so that they can eventually fix what's become a very systemic problem at ASU.
He's Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com. Great spot for you to go for a lot of your ASU news. He joins us here for a couple of minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. If, in fact, it is Capel, this is going to sound very unfair to some. But, Chris, I think you would agree with me on this. If he doesn't convince Bagley and Barcelo to stay here, given that Barcelo, in my opinion, will be right on the same level as Bibby nationally when Bibby was coming out. And Bagley's already the number one player in the nation. You don't let the number one big man in the country get out of your borders, do you? I mean, if it's Capel or whomever it is, but if it's Capel, he's got to keep those two players here, or at least be a finalist for those two. Am I right on that?
Well, put yourself in the shoes of these players that you're talking about, and in particular, Marvin Bagley. If you're Marvin Bagley, why do you go to ASU? I mean, explain it to me. I understand.
Okay.
You can play at home, and that's nice, and your grandpa can come watch all your games, but you're playing in front of 5,000 fans. It's not that big of a deal. It doesn't move the needle. What you're saying about ASU's coaching search not resonating nationally is a great emblem of that, right? So if you're him and you're only going to play 1 year in college, which he is because he's a top five pick in the NBA draft, why are you not going to Kentucky or Kansas or a similar school in terms of you're going to compete at the highest level, you have a chance to be in the Final Four, all those things going for you? I think if you're Marvin Bagley, that has to be demonstrated that that's possible at ASU. Now, certainly he's one of the main factors that enables that. But what they have to do in advance of that, I think, is they have to convince Marcus Howard to come back on board. They have to either get Howard or Barcelo. I think you have to get one of the two guys. You're probably not going to get both. Howard is more amenable probably to coming back in the right situation with the right coach. He's the USA Basketball. Jeff Capel is the USA Basketball.
That's my point on Bagley. Is the Capel USA Basketball connection? You just answered the question you're asking me. The Capel, Krzyzewski, Colangelo, because I'm not one of those that buys into Jerry and Michael Crow are all happy with each other and the USA place is going to get built. I mean, I've heard completely the opposite on that. But nonetheless, if Capel uses the USA Basketball emblem as leverage to, you come here, play for me, and Coach K is amenable to this, and you get him for 1 year. That's the only way I see this working out that makes Capel a very good hire, is using the USA basketball brand to his advantage, because the ASU basketball brand does nothing right now.
Right. Well, I agree with that, but there's a lot of things that have to happen first before you can really make a convincing argument to Bagley or their family that that's what they should do. Mm-hmm. I think if everything goes well in advance of that for the next 2 years, then maybe you have a chance. But that has to start with getting really good players in the two classes prior and having some success on the court, and then having those things advantage your situation. Capel gets you into the door in a different kind of a way with Bagley, but he doesn't get the deal done, nor can he be expected to get the deal done unless those things happen. And as far as the McDonald's thing, the USA basketball thing, certainly ASU is going to try to lead people away from thinking that's the case, and for understandable reasons, but I think that there's certainly a big factor going on with
yeah,
all that.
Yeah. If Capel's not the guy, who's your number two?
Me personally, I would probably go with Josh Pastner. I think Josh Pastner has the infrastructure from a recruiting standpoint, very energetic. He knows the lay of the land. What I think has been a big problem at ASU historically is you have coaches that come in and it takes them 2, 3, 4 years before they really understand the ASU dynamic. Pastner would understand that much better and more quickly because he was already at U of A. He's immersed in the culture in a different way. He knows the landscape. He has a lot of connections. So I like him. If not him, I think Bobby Hurley would do a good job. He has name recognition value with parents of recruits. He's a point guard. He played the game at the NBA level for a half dozen years. And his star is kind of on the rise. People say he's very ambitious. I like guys like that. I think it's better probably than going with somebody who's already failed and you're not so sure about. Better to take a flyer on a young, energetic guy who needs the success a little bit more.
Okay, in Pastner's case, has never won a tournament game, 5-20, 5 wins, 20 losses at Memphis against top 20 teams.
Right.
He's about to get fired back there too. I mean, they're not happy with him.
Well, they have very unrealistic expectations. I mean, when you're replacing the guy who's probably the most current legendary coach in the game in John Calipari, and you were used to going 35-2 for like 5 years in a row, and maybe you didn't do that in the most honest of ways as far as running your program. You got in trouble in two places before you left. Mm-hmm. I think they have unrealistic expectations at Memphis, but I know from a recruiting standpoint, Pastner would at a minimum get you athletes that would be exciting. They'd play a fun style of basketball. You have to try to move up in the pecking order if you're ASU. Right now, you know Arizona is going to do better. UCLA is going to have better talent. USC has an advantage, even though it hasn't monopolized that in the way that it should. Oregon is always going to get players. Stanford's always going to get players. So there's only 4 spots for the NCAA tournament on average in a given year. UCLA and U of A should always be 2 of those. So it's hard. And then Utah is doing really well right now. You have to increase your talent. And the way that you increase your talent is a guy who has access to a lot of different corners of the landscape at a grassroots level, and that would be a Josh Pastner type guy.
I'd go out of the box and look at Dane Fife at Michigan State. And some people at ASU said that's an interesting name that they'd heard, but who was it? Was it a guy calling them? You know, is that as far as it went? He's Izzo's assistant. He's already been a head coach. Yeah, it's not going to be the sexy hire, but there's something about an Izzo guy to me that I would find really interesting. But you know, and even then, it's not going to sell tickets. You know, I don't know if Jeff Capel will sell tickets. I don't know that.
Yeah, I don't think that he probably will. I think it's a wait-and-see fan base. There's a lot of names that I think would be decent. I mean, Bryce Drew is another young guy I like who played at a point guard at a high level, and his dad was a coach. I think that makes a lot of sense. Randy Ray is at Weber State. Didn't have a great season last year, but he's earned a great reputation for recruiting above his level and talent evaluation and acquisition, which I think is super important at ASU. So both of those guys make a lot of sense. I mean, even Jack Murphy.
Jack Murphy, I was just going to bring him up, Chris. Eric and I were up there, and Jack's got 4 guys from Florida coming in next year that are ballers, that are players. Yeah. And he's impressive. Well, he's really impressive.
He's very impressive. And the thing is, another year or two, he could easily be a hot name commodity.
Yep.
who gets a big job. And so I think you have to think ahead of the curve on this. I spend a lot of time in the spring and summer months on the road watching these coaches in the gym and getting a sense of who's really on the ball. And Jack Murphy would be at the top of my list as far as somebody who's dialed in, understands what he's looking at, and has a good feel for the talent a part of the equation. So certainly I think he's really good. So I look at guys like that, and are they going to move the needle from a win the press conference standpoint? No, but the press conference is over
right.
and after one news cycle, and who cares about that anymore? I think you have to get somebody who's a good coach, who can appeal to players and resonate with your fan base emotionally.
All right. Taking a lot of time here with you, but I'm fine with that. Before I let you go here, what have you made out of Ray Anderson through this? Because this is his first major hire. You know, baseball coach, wrestling coach, it's fine. He even fired a swimming coach last week. From a standpoint of learning Ray Anderson from agent number two guy in the NFL to now being in this role, what have you learned about him, if anything?
Well, clearly he's made some pretty significant missteps. If you look at it, he was trying to give Sendak a three-year extension, which would have put 5 years on his contract as recently as last fall. I think he didn't do a good job of taking the temperature of the water and understanding the level to which fans were discontented with Sendak's performance. Otherwise, why is he giving Sendak an extension? Which, by the way, if that hadn't been shot down by the Arizona Board of Regents for the first time ever in a revenue sport at ASU, to where instead of a three-year extension, he only got a one-year extension, we wouldn't even be talking about Sendak being fired right now. I mean, we wouldn't be talking about Capel or any other type of replacement because it wouldn't be happening. So I think you have to have some responsibility put at Ray Anderson for not getting a really good feel for things initially. Now, subsequent to that, why is he not using a coaching search when he doesn't have an extensive background in college athletics? I think coaching searches are the executive firms are good and bad, but if not for the fact that he already knew who he was targeting in advance and how that came about, I think he probably would be using one. Now, the way I'm going to really evaluate Anderson, though, isn't in the short term on this hire. It's, are they getting their ducks in a row to be able to set up for a much bigger hire if they need to in a few years' time? So for me, it's really going to be wait and see. I have some very strong reservations about how he's done to this point with the basketball search. He also put a guy in charge of ASU basketball now, Dave Cohen, who replaced Don Rogers, who has no experience in men's college basketball of any kind. And now he's basically the right-hand guy on basketball. So I need to see how that's all going to play out before I make any sort of determination. But there are some eyebrow-raising curious things that take place.
Yeah, and I think you can – I think those are all very fair points. Last thing is, one of my concerns with Capel or Hurley is, are they eyeing this as a stepping stone job? Because that's all it's been, or guys come here to get fired that win Coach of the Year in other conferences. Because Krzyzewski's going to retire, and you know and I know that every Duke guy out there is going to be angling to be the guy to replace Krzyzewski. So does that concern you at all if it is Capel?
Well, I think ASU should look at it like they would be lucky if somebody was good enough at their program to where it could be a stepping stone job. I mean, how many guys have in the last 30 years used ASU as a stepping stone? It's never happened. So if that comes to fruition to where somebody from ASU ends up being able to get a Duke caliber job or even something that's a little bit below that but still a really good job, that means ASU is winning, probably going to the tournament more than once or twice, and is probably going to be a lot better position from a fan standpoint and revenue to make a better hire subsequently. So I don't think ASU fans or media should be worried about that whatsoever. I think that would be actually a great thing.
All right. And I can see that argument too. All right. Good. I would talk to you about some football, but we're out of time. You know, this is more fun.
Next time.
I'll probably see you, what do you think, Monday or Tuesday, first of the week?
I would definitely say Monday or Tuesday is probably when it's going to happen.
Yeah, if Duke gets eliminated tomorrow night, Monday. If Duke doesn't, Tuesday or Wednesday, I would think. So stay
well. I agree with you. Yep.
See you. It's Chris Cartman, as always. Good to visit with Chris. SunDevilSource.com. Good stuff with Chris Cartman. On the other side, so we're going to talk about Sarah Thomas, why you need to know that name if you're a sports fan. Goody at the Movies is coming up here in a little bit as well. It is Friday. Good Friday to you and yours. We talked to Goody about Lynn Sue Cooney walking from Channel 12. Who's going to replace her? It's 31 years being on the set. A lot of you have been watching her. And he wants to talk about Why We Are Young, the movie. So that's all straight ahead, too. Good Friday, and it is really a good Friday to you and yours. I'm not joking. It's the way it is. I'm a little loose today. I'll admit it. I'm just, you know, having fun here on a Friday. Some days we have shows like that. We've been doing this for 3 years, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. Monday will be the Final Four championship game, the national title game, four tomorrow, two on Monday. And I'm wanting Duke and Kentucky. That'll be on Monday. The Diamondbacks open the season on Tuesday. Now, metal detectors are going to be in place this year at the ballpark. Am I surprised by this? No, I am not. I want to go to the baseball game. And in our world, I talk to friends who are pilots that say, when you go through TSA and you go through security, it's really a joke. It really is. It's more of a distraction than anything else. The terrorists have won and all that stuff. I think it's just acceptable when you go out to a big sporting event that you go through metal detectors. So give yourself a little bit of extra time. That's on Tuesday. I'm going to go to opening day of the Diamondbacks. I'm very happy that Trevor Cahill is no longer a member of the Diamondbacks. I think it's terrific. You know, I don't like to see somebody fail, but gosh almighty, he looked like on the mound that his head was about to explode with the pressure on him. Contract that he had, it was an immovable contract, and somehow the Diamondbacks found a way to trade him to Atlanta, so Archie Bradley gets put into the rotation. And I wish him well. I just have a feeling, kind of like when Brandon McCarthy got out of Phoenix and went to the Yankees, and he pitched pretty well, now he's with the Dodgers, that Trevor Cahill probably will go down to Atlanta and be just fine and will say, what was this? Where was this? How did this happen? Sarah Thomas is a name you need to know today. So Sarah Thomas is being hired by the NFL as the first female official. She's a Mississippi native, was a finalist previously. She has been taking part in the league's officiating development program. She worked preseason games. She will have been in the NFL for 20 years since her career began. She's been in the pipeline for a while now, and she will be part of the refereeing crew for the NFL this year. She is an accomplished official, holds the honor of being the first woman to ever officiate an NCAA football game. In 2007, an NCAA bowl game. In 2009, she did that as well. Last summer, she said she simply wished to be treated not as a trailblazer, but as an official. She said, quote, being raised with brothers, I'm just one of the guys, I guess. I don't try to be one of the guys. I am a female, but I don't look at myself as just a female. I look at myself as an official. With their respect and the respect that I have for them, it just doesn't feel like it's a male-dominated profession. Now, we've seen in the NBA, when they first had a couple of female officials, Violet Palmer started out as one of them, or when Lauren Holtzman earlier this year, Chris Paul was not big on her officiating, that she was out of her league when she called a technical foul on him, which he disagreed. There's been some stuff about Sarah Thomas online that has not been flattering. There's always going to be the guy that will be living in the 50s or the 60s that says, I don't want to see a girl on my football field. The game's not played the way it used to be. Can you believe there's a female roughing? I can already hear it. I can already hear it. And it's like, guys, get out of your cave, man. Just move on. Be accepting. Your day and your way is gone. The way the NFL is played now anyways, the big hits are being taken out. The way the game is being legislated and officiated, you better have sharp people on the field. Doesn't matter to be male or female. Doesn't matter. Am I going to be looking down on the field and saying it's Sarah Thomas's fault that the Cardinals lost a game if she throws a flag? No. I mean, I would see Jerome Boger's crew come out, and the problem is I know Jerome Boger's name. It's never good when you know the name of the officiating crew. It's never good. I have no problems with this. None. She will go through hell and back with some people. When she walks out on the field, there will be the guy that has no idea, that's bombed out of his mind, or that just has this redneck mentality about him. That's not the way it's played here. I can't have some lady get back in the kitchen and do the dishes and bring me dinner. I'm fine with this. Fine. This is, to me, it's a non-story, but to many people nationally today, Sarah Thomas is like a trending topic. I don't know. It's a female reffing a football game. So what? Can she get it right? Can she get it close to being right? It's nearly impossible to do the job right as it's laid out now. The rule book is so thick and changes over and over and over. So that's on my mind today. This segment brought to you by Santan Ford. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. Santan Ford experience was like this yesterday. I got done doing the show, drove down to a business meeting in Tempe, had some lunch downtown, visited with my son, went over to another business luncheon down in Chandler, went to another business meeting late in the afternoon in Gilbert. And I'm doing so in the Ford Fusion. You're like, man, you drive a lot, Brad. Yeah. Yeah, I do. When you run your own business and you're in the world of sports and you need to be at practices and places and meetings and with people and on a schedule, you better have a vehicle that's dependable and reliable. And also one that economically makes a lot of sense. So yesterday I got home. I loved it. Turned off my Ford Fusion, the hybrid, 48.9 miles per gallon, 48.9. Now, that makes me feel very good. It was economical, and I got a lot of business done and did so in comfort and style. Driving the Ford Fusion from Santan Ford. Santan Ford just off the Santan 202 in Val Vista. Santan Ford, where it is all about you. There's a college football note that you should be aware of in state. Connor Brewer is visiting Northern Arizona University. He visited last night. He is there today. Connor Brewer, the former University of Arizona Wildcat quarterback, former Texas Longhorn, former Chaparral High School star quarterback that was pursued by a lot of big programs. And there's still some big programs kicking the tires on him. I think if Connor Brewer does decide to go to Northern Arizona University and be the quarterback, some people won't get it. I completely get it, and it's absolutely unequivocally the right choice. The only reason you'd go to some of these programs that are still kicking the tires on him is ego. That's it. There's no guarantee. You go up to NAU, they're going to throw for a ton of yards. They're going to build the offense around you. They've got some players coming in. Kendall Taylor, who was player of the year at Hamilton High, transferred out of Cal. Eric and I saw him the other day on the field up at NAU. That would be a terrific, terrific landing spot for Connor Brewer. He's got 2 years. First year, he's going to get the rust off, get better as the season goes along. He'll be on scouts' radars for the NFL. And then it's up to him. You know, people that laugh about the Big Sky don't have a clue. They'll find you. Just ask Oregon. They went to Eastern Washington to find their new quarterback. On the other side, Goody at the Movies. We'll talk with Bill Goody Koontz, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central, on While We're Young, the Ben Stiller, Naomi Watts movie. And Lynn Sukuni parting ways with Channel 12. I'm going to talk to Goody about that. And who's going to replace her? That's next. Now, because you know what's going on in the world of sports, but Lynn Sukuni is no longer going to be at Channel 12 after 31 years. I want to talk to Bill Goody Koontz, chief film critic for Gannett, AZ Central, about Lynn Su leaving and the movie While We're Young. Were you surprised Lynn Su's leaving?
Yeah, I guess. It's just because you're used to it, you know? I mean, on the one hand, yeah, I'm sure I'm surprised because it's been around forever, seemingly. On the other hand, I mean, 31 years is TV, as you know, is an eternity. I mean, that's cutthroat business there, man.
9 years was way too long for me. I mean, just just get me out of here. Just enough of this.
You liked it, but you know the firsthand, the pressures of it, and ratings books, and sweeps, and all that. I mean, they, you know, I'll tell you a quick story about a local station.
Yeah.
When I used to cover TV, sweeps, as people may or may not know, three times a year, they have big sweeps in November, February, and May. And that's why you always see huge guest stars on, you know, your favorite TV show or whatever, because that's when they set their ratings. They set their advertising rate. The local news station once, and I don't even remember which one it was, but it was years ago, for sweeps, they brought on a Scorpion guy to talk about Scorpion.
Mm.
And he said the big thing that they were going to do was they're going to have the Scorpion sting him on the air.
All right.
And so, like, they promoted this thing. Whatever the primetime show was leading up to the Fox News, they had a Scorpion countdown. And it, like, you know, we're going to do this, we're going to do this. And so, like, it gets to be the time, and they tease it. Get the guy out there, the Scorpion is in his hands, and it won't sting it. And he's like pushing it and poking it and prodding it, and the Scorpion is just like, just wants to get away.
Damn Scorpion, come on!
And then so what became one of my favorite phrases in the history of television news, they brought in what they called the backup Scorpion. And he didn't want to do it. He was like, and he finds it. The guy's like, well, I think I feel something. It feels a little tingly right there. And I've never been stung by a scorpion. But my understanding is there's no question when it happens that it might, you know, well, it might have, it might not have. It was just, that to me encapsulated sleep, you know. But anyway, as you know, that the pressure is intense. And for her to hang around for 31 years and, you know, and ride through that, I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Well, it's the hours, too. It's nights, it's weekends. You know, when you're in sports, it's weekends. And she's had to do some of that with the Olympics through the years over on NBC. So, I mean, I completely applaud that she is doing what she's doing. And I know a lot of people were surprised by this. I just think, too, the industry has changed so much that people aren't watching a 10 o'clock show anymore. So why do I need to be there like I once needed to be there, if that makes sense?
Yeah, it does. And I think also something you said there, like, you know, weekend nights and all that stuff. One of the things that people, and they shouldn't, because, you know, they are good jobs. And you can't, it's like being a movie critic. You can't complain much about it, really.
Right, right.
I mean, you know, you get paid well. You get to do fun stuff. You know, you don't have to dig ditches unless it sweeps one, you know. The one thing is that when people turn on their TV, if you are a TV sportscaster and there's a big sporting event, when I turn on my TV, I expect you to be there.
Yep.
And it doesn't matter if it's a Saturday or a Sunday or if it's nighttime or if it's early morning or if it's middle of the day, I expect to see you there. And I think that the part of that equation that people don't think about is, well, that means he's got to get up and he's got to, you know, get dressed and he's got to go down there and he's got to do it. He has to physically be there, you know, and I think that can be wearing on people.
Is there somebody in the market that you look at that you'd say this person would make an ideal replacement for her? Or is this, by the way, is this too close for comfort with your job? I don't want to have you overstep a line here, but.
No, there's no line to overstep. I mean, I have no knowledge, working knowledge of any of that stuff. I think Tram Mai does a good job on the, UVB Live that they do. I think she'd be good, but I have no idea. I mean, I don't know what goes into it. You know more.
Yeah,
you know more about that than I do. But I'll tell you this: yeah. When I started doing some TV, which I do occasionally,
yep,
and then sometimes they'll have me sort of weigh in live, you know, on something. I think that is a hugely underrated skill, is being able to do live TV and not sound like a complete idiot all the time. Everybody's going to sound like an idiot sometimes, you know. I mean, because it's a hard job and things come flying at you. But then, man, that is a hard job to do, and just kind of hold down all the bases that you got to do.
Yeah. Well, you're right. And it does take an acquired. It's a skill, or for some, it's an acquired taste. You'll see how they navigate through and
you
out.
You got to be a quick thinker, man. You got to be able to. I didn't always appreciate that when I was making fun of them when I would write about it. It's like I used to make fun of Barney the Dinosaur before when I was young and do every damn thing. And, you know, and all these moms, they would write in and get mad at me and say, you know, it settles my kids down. You know what you're talking about? And I was like, oh, it'll be different when I have kids. When I had kids, I was like, thank God for Barney the Dinosaur.
Well, it's like I've told Eric, I want Bill to come in and just host a show on his own sometime. Just have him do a couple hours just solo. Because I think you would be terrific. And, you know, the same thing on the news end where, like, I think Stephanie Hockridge over at Channel 15 is really good. And she's over there with Katie and all that stuff. And there's probably people that have been in the market that have left. I'm not even thinking of that it could be brought back. But
I'm sure there are people at smaller markets that see that story that she's leaving. And they, you know, they got their tapes and they got their every. Well, I don't even know how they do it now. You probably email somebody. But I guarantee you that people are just, you know, I mean, that's this good market, as you know.
That's a big job. Okay, while we're young, so Ben Stiller, Naomi Watts, somebody told me it's a bromance.
Uh, kind of, but it's a little. It gets tricky. It gets dicey. Ben Stiller is a documentary filmmaker who spent 7 years on his last movie, and I love this line. He says, "I'm circling it." He's on. Ben Stiller, I think, even better than Woody Allen, does the best job of any actor I can think of trying to fit in and failing miserably.
Mm-hmm.
And he's really good at that. But this guy, who's also a documentary filmmaker but much younger than he is, played by Adam Driver, comes up to him in a class and says, "So come in, I love your work, da-da-da." And he gradually becomes friends with him. And Ben Stiller and his wife, Naomi Watts, try to be more like Adam Driver and his wife, Amanda Seyfried. And they are total. They are so hipster that they've like come out the other end of it. They're like something else. But it turns out that they're going to end up working together a little bit. But what do they really want? And it's good. And Noah Baumbach said it. He's really good at these observational things where it doesn't sound like much, but it turns out to be interesting. And it also has one of my favorite lines, maybe the favorite line of any movie this year, where Ben Stiller's going in to meet a donor or something to try to get money for the documentary. And to get him all fired up, Adam Driver says, "Here, I'm listening to this." He, of course, he only listens to like vinyl and you know, the cassette player, Walkman, and all this stuff. So he puts his headphones on, and Ben Stiller is the Eye of the Tiger from the Rocky movie.
Yeah.
And Adam Driver's like, he's like, "Yeah, didn't they get you pumped up? Didn't you get that pumped up?" And Ben Stiller looks kind of confused. He's like, "Yeah, I guess." He says, "You know, I can remember when this was actually just considered bad." And that, to me, that encapsulated everything about the retro craze, the hipster craze. It's like, it doesn't matter whether it's good or bad. If it's old, it must be good. So, I love that. That's my favorite line.
So you like this, and there's been, I like Ben Stiller. So there's something about Mary's when I think I really first started liking Ben Stiller.
I like him a lot. Sometimes he's the kind of actor that he's so good at doing that kind of thing that you can also not like him. You know what I mean? He can be annoying.
Yeah. Like Meet the Fockers. Meet the Fockers. I got a little tired of it, actually.
Yeah.
I didn't love Meet the Fockers.
No, I didn't. Those are lesser movies, certainly. But I really like him in this. And this, you know, you're always asking, like, if you're going to be watching The Final Four or whatever, what can I do for my date or my wife, whatever?
Yeah.
A man and woman would equally enjoy this movie.
All right. Who do you like in The Final Four, by the way, before I get out of here?
How you cannot like Kentucky.
You do like Kentucky. Yeah.
But I liked last weekend. I liked a close game.
I want Kentucky Duke. That's what I'm rooting for. I want to see heavyweights. Nothing against Michigan State and Tom Izzo. Nothing against Wisconsin. They're just not heavyweights.
There's something in between. But they, you know, I was talking to somebody, maybe it was on Facebook or something. You know, all this stuff melds together. And they were saying, "Please, please, no, Duke, Kentucky." And I was like, "Man, are you kidding? That
are you joking? Come on!"
It's like on the one hand, for real basketball fans, it's like a clash of the titans. I mean, great.
And then
instead, the other thing is, I mean, the numbers would be huge. Not just because for basketball fans, but also like the people who hate watch. You know, there are people that hate both of those programs, so they would tune in for that. And that would be kind of cool if it just like, you know, it ended up in like they played so many overtimes that it just like never ended.
Well, it'd be something to where my wife would not want me to sit with her and watch Dancing with the Stars, which I just want to puke all over my shoes on Monday night. I'm just done. Just finished with that show. Just go. I'll enjoy your weekend. Thanks for your time, as always. See you later. There's Bill. It's always good to leave him laughing. Goody at the movies. Sports360AZ.com. So we do something really cool that upsets some people. It's the all-academic team. And we released the all-academic team for basketball last night. Jared Cohen puts this together. Jordy, you're doing soccer. Is that right? Are you doing the all-academic?
Yeah. Yep.
Good luck with that. Because I started getting
the emails already.
Oh, yeah. And that's great you're getting them, but when you put the all-academic team together and you don't have somebody on there and you get these rambling, hate-filled letters, poor Jared, it's simple. The coach didn't email us. That's it. Don't blame us. We're just the ones doing the all-academic team. Because, look, it's pretty easy to see who can shoot a ball on the basketball court. Really not that hard to figure that out. I want the grade point averages. That's much more impressive to me. And so we've released that. It's up on the site right now. Basketball, and Jordan is working on the soccer end of things. We also have some of our content from earlier this week. I know it's Friday, Good Friday. You may be catching us getting out of your normal work pattern. We had a great time with Charles Barkley earlier this week, about a 20-minute long interview that you can check out online. And plenty of video. We're all about video. We're Arizona-centric. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with AZ Central Sports, the Arizona Republic. On a Good Friday, I'm Brad Sussmatt.